Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Josh Brown, are you a journalist? Because I heard you've got leads.
What do you mean? Oh, because I've been to Leeds.
He's got the Leeds.
L-double-E-D-S. Yeah. I understand.
Are you an electrician? Because I heard you've got Leeds.
What does that one mean? I don't get that one.
We're both so sleep deprived, and that was the worst possible pun I could do in your direction.
At least you're all in on this podcast, hey?
That's very good. Next week, I'll be all out. Funnily enough, that's a reference for the four wrestling fans who have come across of What Culture Wrestling to listen to the gaming podcast. Because this is The Wind-Up. I'm Scott Tilford. That's Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Tilford.
Hello, hello. We've been away across the weekend. You've been to the lovely bit of Leeds Fest.
I did. It was really nice. Yeah. Only did the day this year, which was already way too much. I'm so old, man. Like, my back hurts, my legs hurt. I got caught in the rain for the first time.
I've got old man back every day these days.
Yes. It was dreadful. I mentioned this, I think, on Twitter before. I swiftly deleted it because I was like, no, I'm not checking Twitter while I'm at a music festival. I was like, I don't want to see the replies to this. But it was, I think it's a testament to how old I am that two separate
people. You think you're too old.
Two separate people, two separate strangers, should I add, on this day in the music festival said variations of, oof, you look like you've had a long weekend, mate. I'd only been there 4 hours. I was in Newcastle that morning. I hadn't done the weekend. I hadn't even left. I was like, oh, thank you very much.
I'll tell you what, a massive shout out to all the people that I ran into when I was down at AEW's All In event. Always lovely seeing people. Genuinely an honour to, it's always an honour to be heard by anyone. So that was really, really cool.
Didn't really hear what they said, but I shook someone's hand during the Killers, and that was very nice. Who was there? Next to me, and then went mad to what did they even open with? They opened with
Mr. Brightside.
They didn't. They ended with Mr. Brightside.
I Shot in the Dark. That I didn't know if that was them.
But Shot in the Dark is, funnily enough, another song that they have. I think
very good.
Yeah,
also a John Mayer song.
Is that right?
Shout out to John Mayer.
Yeah. Anyway, the point was, it was good. How did you enjoy London?
I can't go into that. That's a lot of that. But I just London. That sounds like something horrible happened.
It didn't.
It's just very, very busy. London's extremely busy. Put up with it. Went to see wrestling for the first time in about 20 years. It was good fun. It was a big show. It was at Wembley. I'm not going to do it again. I don't want to spend that much money. I don't. All the wrestling fans, all the AEW people know about the conversation that was doing the rounds before All In itself, about how the card was a bit naff. It was a bit thrown together. There was a lot of injuries on the roster, so it didn't seem like it was going to come together as strongly as it could have done. I didn't think the live event side of it made up for any of that. I still thought the actual card was pretty flat, but that's a conversation for a different medium altogether.
Interestingly, though, every time I go to London, I always leave saying, I can't get into that because I'm so traumatized just by being in London.
I'll tell you what.
It's the place I feel most out of place. I feel unwelcome when I'm in London. I feel uncool.
It's so
busy and it scares me.
Yeah, I love, as you well know, cyberpunk stuff. I love the idea of like everyone has like a million little stories are happening in London every minute of the day. I love the vibe of that, and I love that you can just blend into it. And then it makes it even more special when you do get recognized. You do see someone who talks about video games or recognizes us or whatever. Genuine thank you. Like I said, it's an honor. But at the same time, I'm always so glad to get out of that maelstrom. Also, always so glad to get out of that fog that is London. I just want to disconnect from it for a bit. There's a certain pace to city life that obviously, you know, and we are in the northeast of England, like we're right next to Newcastle and Gateshead and stuff. And I used to live in Newcastle, and there's a vibe to that that I used to absolutely love. Mm. And I am done with it. You're talking about being too old. I'm 6 years older than you, and I'm too old. So I like getting away from the city. I love that it's there, and I like that I can go get lost in it for certain nights out or go see a movie or whatever. What things that people do around other humans. Well, but at some point, I want to be away from the humans.
Let me segue this back back into video games, yes. Right? Because I was talking to my partner yesterday and I was saying, nothing makes me appreciate video games and media in general more than doing things with people and getting exhausted socially. Every time I go to like a big music thing or a big night out, I wake up the next day, maybe a little hungover, maybe not hungover, thinking, I can't wait to play some video games.
Yeah, yeah.
So all the way back from Leeds yesterday, I was thinking, I can't wait to get home and play some video games. I can't wait to watch some movies. I can't wait to not have to speak to anyone.
Yeah, man, we're going to cover a couple of things here. We've got a few news items to get to because this is the wind-up where we go through the latest video games, the latest talking points in the industry. But we're going to talk about some stuff that we're playing. Games have kicked back in. Sea of Stars is out today.
Wow.
My most anticipated game of the year. I bought it. I bought it on Switch, the one system that doesn't give me a free version of it. So I bought it.
Yeah,
I want to make
crazy.
Sure that Sabotage Studios get their money.
That's good, man. And by all accounts, you know, I know you've not played it yet, but
no.
I saw the reviews for it. Were absolutely insane.
Woo-hoo! 10 out of 10. 5 stars across the board. The demo was incredible. Go play it. It's free. It's lush. But yeah, I also downloaded it on PlayStation. Why not?
Why not?
Get it on every system? I mean, I'm going to play it on Switch when I'm on the train.
Get it on Game Pass as well.
Get it on Game Pass as well. I might actually do that and take a photo just for the sake of it. But yeah, Sea of Stars is out. Armored Core is out. Fort Solace is out. Spider-Man's out soon. Starfield's out soon. Baldur's Gate's out soon on consoles. There's a lot to get to, but we'll start with stuff that we're playing and then we'll get to some news items. Tell me about Armored Core Fires of Rubicon.
It's an Armored Core game. I'll
what
tell you
that. What does
that
mean to someone
worse,
like me?
It's,
because I'll say what, right now, even though I just asked you a question, I'll cut you off.
Yeah,
I did not realize, or rather I did realize, how few people are talking about it. Like,
yeah.
When Elden Ring came out, you couldn't move for social media posts about Elden Ring. Ain't an effing soul talking about Armored Core.
The beauty and the drawback of Armored Core 6 is that it is an incredibly niche game. It's an incredibly niche experience, and considering how big From Software have got, it is a little bit surprising, both in a good and bad way, how few caveats they've made for the mainstream with Armored Core 6. Like, if you wanted a true sequel, there have, of course, been changes, some popular, some not so popular, judging on the Reddit, you will get them. But this isn't, like, a big kind of cross-appeal From Software game. I don't think, personally, it's nowhere near the level of Elden Ring in terms of it being, like, this talking point or this access point for what they do best. And I think part of the reason why is that Armored Core 6 is a good game, but for me, it's not a great game. And that is partly because of the stuff I don't necessarily like about the genre. If you don't know what this game is, I'll explain it to you right now. It's essentially like a mech building action game. Mm-hmm. You are taking on these kind of odd case style missions that only last a few minutes if you are, you know, not getting killed over and over again. They're quite basic. It's destroy a bunch of other robots. It's press triangle if you're playing on PlayStation 2, you know, activate some points across the map, and then you're done. But the beauty is, and the purpose of those small missions is to build a mech that gets you through those areas as efficiently as possible. And the amount of customization you have available to you is crazy. Like, you can build whatever mech you imagine. If you want it to be a big bruiser tank with low mobility, you can do that. If you want it to be a Gundam or something, you
can put a blade on my wrist.
You can put many blades on your wrist. And the whole kind of point is, like, making a build that suits your playstyle, but also finding a build that defeats the boss of a stage.
How's the difficulty? I've bought this game, but I haven't started playing it yet. I literally bought it because it's FromSoft. I know nothing about Armored Core at all, other than a couple of visual references from Armored Core 2. So I'm just going into this because it's FromSoft. And so it's, but like I said, I'm not seeing anybody talk about it or mention it that much, other than occasionally people say that it's extremely hardcore. Hardcore, do you think that it holds up as a FromSoft game, or is this, should this be approached with a different mentality?
I think it should be approached with a different mentality. Like, none of your skills from the other FromSoft games are going to be transferable here. Like, the pace of the gameplay is so fast. Like, even if you're in one of the slow mechs, like, you're going to be attacked with a load of projectiles, lots of enemies on screen at once. It's very fast-paced. It's very kinetic. It's very colorful.
Have you died a lot?
Not really, but this is what I was going to get to next. You know, I've also kind of been keeping away from the chatter, but I do know that the boss to end the first chapter is notorious already.
Oh, again.
That is such a sort of gatekeeping boss that demands you get to grips with the game systems and is really punishing. Like,
From Software tries to not put the hardest boss at the start of the game challenge.
Well, it's not at the start of the game, admittedly. It's the end of the first chapter, so you'll go like an hour and a half before meeting this guy. You'll at least get to like grips. It's not, you know, the asylum demon or anything like that.
Right,
so you've unlocked a lot of different parts, but it is one of those bosses that you need. It's kind of like, it's closer to, I think, Ginichiro in Sekiro.
Right, okay.
Where it's a boss where if you've kind of been fumbling through you need to learn the systems, otherwise you are just going to get absolutely annihilated. And annihilated I did get for about 45 minutes, just over and over again, until I kind of found the right build to go and beat the boss.
How is restarting in those moments when you just want to go again, and how is performance? Because something that did the rounds over the weekend was that the PlayStation 4 version runs better on PS5 than the PS5 version does.
Oh.
However, we're only talking about like single digit dropped frames versus like a full locked 60 or whatever. The resolution's always better on the PS5, but if you didn't notice at all, then that's good.
No, I didn't notice at all. Like, cool. I'd have said, if you hadn't clarified that it's been like rock solid 60. Maybe
still looks great.
I've noticed the occasional frame drop when you first load into the level for about 3 seconds, and then it kind of goes away. But it's always, at least for me so far, I'm about halfway through the game, it's held up during those kind of bigger action set pieces. And I think, going back to what you asked about, you know, like kind of restarting and checkpointing, that's kind of its biggest Achilles heel.
Oh, no.
Because in one way, it does kind of give you generous checkpoints. Like, it will always checkpoint you right before a boss scene, ever corpse running or anything like that.
Cool.
The issue is, because those bosses often require radically different builds to kind of take on, or at least you're incentivized to try different things, to try new tactics, you can change your mech at any time when you die, but you can only choose from the parts that you've already bought. So if you kind of realize that there is a weapon in the store, like the in-game store, like, you know, using real money, of course, you're just getting credits from doing missions. If you realize there's a weapon that might be useful, but you haven't bought it already, or you didn't have enough money, you'll then have to quit all the way out the mission and buy it just to go back into the mission, get to where you were, and then you can finally try it. So that's the only drawback. I wish they gave you the store in that menu. And that kind of was a killer for that really difficult chapter one boss, because at that point I had unlocked some stuff, but not enough to radically change the way my mech played. So,
like I say, mission length, like you're saying, is not that long, unless that particular boss fight one is longer to get back to that starting point.
That was it. It was still frustrating enough because you still have to go through kind of three areas of enemies. You have to fight a sub boss, and then you get to the main boss, and there's a couple of cutscenes in between. And that's the longest mission I've done by far, apart from maybe the opening one, but it was still a little bit frustrating. But still, when the game works, it's so fun.
Right.
Like I said, this kind of game isn't necessarily to my tastes, almost. Like, I like the other Armored Core games, but I liked messing around in the customization screen more than I did actually playing. I spent most of my
time
doing
that. That's what got me in.
That.
Looking at all the different different ways you can paint the mechs and parts of the mechs that you can change. And I was like, oh, the customization side of this is incredible. But I know that you rotate, you kind of build one ultimate mech, but you are kind of switching different play styles and stuff. Because I was like, if I spend an hour painting every last piece of my mech, am I then going to swap it out a few hours in?
Well, you can save those designs, I suppose, and you can match them to whatever new parts. Sweet. I think you definitely will be matching parts out more often than every hour, I would say, at least for new weapons, because you get so many weapons that you want to try, you know, whether you want to go in with blades or whether you want to dual wield shotguns.
Do you know what I want to go in with?
Snipe or bazookas.
I want to go in with blades.
There you go.
Yeah.
Blades are always good, and it looks spectacular. You know, you get those lovely FromSoft vistas here and there. It's just, it doesn't quite have the cohesion to me FromSoft's other titles. It's not God tier like I think they are, but it's such a radically different thing. I just sort of wish, I thought that I would go through this game multiple times with different builds, but I don't think I'll do that. I've found the build that I like right now, and I'm having a lot of fun, but I can't see myself going back to experiment, which the game definitely encourages, because it's certainly shorter than other From Software games, and there's a lot of replayability in the, you can just choose previous missions to go through and try to get through them and get a better rank and more money.
Do you get replaying? So that's okay. Two things. One, the length, like you're saying already you're about halfway through.
Yeah.
But it's almost intentionally designed to be drop in, drop out, and quite a slow, it's an amount of missions that are overall not that many, but you're replaying them so much that gives you longevity. And the thing you're getting by replaying is money to get better gear to tackle the later missions. That's kind of it.
That's kind of it. Right. Yeah. And that's a good loop. That's what a lot of Armored Core fans kind of come for, that replayability, that customizable aspect of, I'm going to tackle this mission this way, I'm going to tackle this mission that way, I'm going to try this playstyle out that I've not dabbled with. That is certainly part of the fun. There's just something about having this combat system in this world, because I don't find the levels themselves that necessarily interesting to explore. Mm. There are some good ones and some spectacular set pieces where it feels grand, it feels huge. Mm. I think I saw a review or maybe a tweet describe it as the kaiju battles from Final Fantasy 16, but yes, fully playable. That might have been Gene Park, maybe from the Washington Post, who said that. Mm-hmm. And that you definitely get that sense here and there, but some missions are a little bit too basic, maybe. But like I said, you know, if this is your genre, I think you'll have an amazing time. If it's not, I don't think it'll necessarily convince you. Like, if you've seen the gameplay, and if you've seen the trailers, if you've watched some people, you know, stream it or whatever, and it hasn't necessarily been for you, I think you can kind of go off that gut instinct. I don't think the game itself is going to persuade you when you pick it up.
I'm curious about the other building side of it. And then, like you said, the different variation when it comes to like weapons and mechanics and like realizing that a mission is giving you grief and being like, oh, actually, I'm going to go back and equip this thing instead.
Yeah.
But it's weird when you watch gameplay footage of it because it almost looks like it's on rails. Like people are flying through these levels and like taking out like three dudes and they run past it. It's almost like Panzer Dragoon or something.
Yeah.
Like where it's sort of like, just like I said, just like getting through it at a certain pace where I'm like, I guess you just get comfortable with the speed of it and the level layouts and you're rerunning that level so much that you're like, okay, it's three guys over there, then it's one guy, then it's this guy, and then whatever. And like that's all part of the fun of it.
Absolutely. But even if you're not rerunning the levels, you'll get so familiar with the combat that you can just make that split second decision to target this group of enemies with the rockets on your back or take out this guy with a close range shotgun blast. And when it works, that is just so magnificent. That's why I've been playing it more or less nonstop because it feels great. You get some amazing feedback and it looks spectacular when you can pull off those flawless runs. This isn't a criticism and I'm saying it facetiously, but it's also true. It hurts my hands to play because you've got four attacks essentially. Uh-huh. You've got the two triggers which control the weapons in your hands, and you've got two shoulder weapons as well, which use the bumpers. So I'm kind of holding this controller in a claw, and in an unnatural kind of claw motion.
You're using your
motion.
Pointy finger and your middle finger as the top two.
Yeah, I'm using those two like that. Uh-huh. But then I'm like kind of like having to maneuver around because like you said, you're going so fast. I'm boosting, I'm pressing square to boost.
Right.
I'm pressing X to get some verticality and I'm floating above them. So I'm kind of like using all my fingers at all times.
Right.
And you're pressing everything at once as well. Because you're encouraged to just wail on these people. So you're pressing all of the back buttons, you're pressing all of the boost buttons.
Just crunch the whole controller over and over again.
It is crazy. It's a crazy way to play, but like I said, when it works and when you get those flawless runs, or if you beat one of those sub-bosses that's giving you grief, it does feel amazing. So it does make it all worthwhile.
I tell you what I've realized there. One, why do more games not use the shoulder buttons for shoulder-mounted stuff?
Yeah.
Even the Predator game didn't do that. And they had the shoulder cannon. So that's a pretty open goal that they could have done.
There you go.
And overall, it's just like a general sort of like pretty positive overall. I know you've played past Armored Core stuff. So it seems like I love, like in more of an abstract sense, I love that someone as big as FromSoft on the run that they're on.
Yeah, me too.
Just went like, why don't we just use all this money to do the most direct thing that only we want to do.
Yeah.
And it'll connect with these other people. But it's been about 11 years since the last Armored Core, which is great.
I think the core gameplay is incredibly solid. I think the boss fights are really spectacular. I love the feel of it. For me, the only letdown is, and I know this might sound weird when I refer to this as a FromSoft game, but like it doesn't necessarily have the story that I want, and it's way more story heavy than other FromSoftware games. Like you're always getting mission briefings, you're always kind of like told which faction is which, why you're doing what you are, and it's just
you care about any of it.
That's it. I don't care about it. You know what I mean? I wish I cared about it more, and I kind of wish the world design was a little bit more interesting because I find that does a lot of the heavy lifting for me from software games. It's like, it's the enemy design. It's the way these levels kind of interlink with each other. But this is very much, an Armored Core game. You know, it hasn't like, it's not like a mech game in a Dark Souls kind of structure or anything like that. Mm. So, you know, if they did change it too much, the Armored Core fans would probably be a little bit pissed off that they did. And we're kind of bringing in too many elements from the other series. It's just, you know, if it had a stronger story, I'd probably be here talking it up a little bit more, but it is that kind of arcade approach. It is that kind of bite-size appeal, and I'm really interested to see what you think about it if you jump into it.
Yeah, it's such a tantalizing thing. Like, I came on, I played the old Tenchu games, but like when coming on board with FromSoft stuff with the original Dark Souls, and then obviously that run that they've been on has been phenomenal. I'm not going into this expecting Souls, I'm just not, but it's the same dev, so I'm just like, it's just cool seeing what they've gone back to and stuff. And like, yeah, the way you describe it and watching bits and pieces of the gameplay, I haven't watched any reviews, I haven't watched much in depth. I thought I'd just go off your general description and just the initial sort of trailers that were out there. there. So yeah, I've bought it, I've downloaded it. I'll be diving in at some point. I've got Sea of Stars now, so I don't know what else I'm supposed to do with my life other than keep playing that. What I've been playing is Fort Solace, a game that I initially despised to my core that I deleted it.
Yeah, I'm and surprised you've like, gone back to this.
Oh, well, I spent the money. I was like, I can't do this twice. I bought Atlas Fallen, horrible game, terrible, and I deleted that. I was like, this is not worth my time. And then I bought Fort Solace because I love Roger Clark and Troy Baker, and I was like, why? The fact that they're just in this little small game, and they were on the Gamescom stage, just randomly, you know, doing like announcing the game. It kind of looked a bit Dead Spacey, but not really with combat. And I was like, I love the idea of a narrative-driven slow burn horror that seems to be set on a different planet.
Yeah.
Humans are researching something. Something goes wrong. Whatever. I'm all up for that. Starring Roger Clark, Troy Baker, and I always forget the woman's name, but it's Julia Brown, who's in it as well. I'm not familiar with her stuff on TV, but I was like, this is a great recipe. This should be brilliant. And a game that is entirely brought down by its walking speed, by its movement speed. You can't jog, you can't move faster, you can only do the slow, it's like the camp speed in Red Dead 2 for a whole game, regardless of what's kicking off, regardless of if you need to go save someone, just walking really slow. And I was just like, this is horrible. This is a horrible feel to a game. And when I first downloaded it, I think it was just because it was juxtaposed against that anticipation, that expectation of like of a cool, it looks gorgeous as well. And the motion capture is great. The facial animation is brilliant. Roger Clark is like voice acting is great. As is Julia Brown. I like their chemistry. All that stuff is great. And then because basically you've kind of got this whole setup where it's a couple of engineers on like a research base, and they get a warning sign from Fort Solace, which is near them. And then Roger Clark's character is like, oh, I'll go check out what's going on. And he hopped in his little Mako style vehicle and drives over there. It's very moody, it's very stylish. You got a really cool logo reveal. I was like, this is going to be awesome. In that tutorial, walk speed just became the full thing.
Right.
And you're trying to explore, you're trying to go from room to room and piece everything together and figure out what's happened at Fort Solace, but it's just so turgidly slow that it doesn't encourage you to explore. You actually end up thinking like, well, I just want the next story beat. I just want to know the next thing. And because it takes its sweet effing time giving you anything of any propulsive nature to what's actually going on, you're not encouraged to go anywhere because it's just going to take forever. You could waste 5 minutes just walking down a corridor, getting stuck and awkwardly rotating around and coming back again. It was just one of those things where I was like, oh, this is horrible. And I deleted it. And then I was like, no, I've spent the money. I do want to know what the rest of the story is. So I re-downloaded it. And I was like, fine, I'll just accept what this is. And I ended up flicking through parts of a playthrough to see, like, does he ever run in this game without, like, just opening for a little bit and watching little bits of gameplay to see if you can run? You can't. You walk through the whole game, but whatever. And so I just accepted it for what it was. And I do appreciate the world design. I like what they're going for. I definitely appreciate the fact that we've got this way smaller scale game dev-wise, and they got put together in a couple of years, and I like the talent that's involved in it and everything. And I don't know, it's one of those things where I want to say that the slow burn pace does have a payoff, because things do start to happen on inside Fort Solace, and there are some good like visual reveals, you know, things in camera reveals and things like that that are like aided by the fact that nothing's happening. So a spike of anything on screen is like, oh my God, there's a thing.
Yeah.
It's just too slow for its own good. I don't know why. I wonder if it's because they need to render the level at a certain pace or something. But it just needs, the thing is as well, it's only about 3 hours long.
Yeah.
If you let the character run remotely faster, you might finish it in like half an hour. Like, it's just, there's very little here. So it's kind of all about slowly exploring Fort Solace as this dude, who's, I think he's called Jack, who is like, just likes a beer every now and then. He's quite a slow guy. He's Julia Brown's character's making fun of his belly and him drinking all the time and everything. Yeah. There's definitely a way for that to work. But over time, it is too slow.
It's interesting. I'm really excited to get a feel for it. Because when you describe it like that, like you did at the end, like you're kind of, you're on this station, you're on this planet, and you're just sort of living as this character. I like that idea. Like that kind of headspace that it could theoretically put you in. But if it is just to the point where it is frustrating, then I can see that becoming a bit of a problem.
I know you've not played that many point and clicks, like the old 90s point and clicks and stuff, but there was always like a thing in those games where you click on something, your character walks towards it, and you click on something else and you walk towards that thing. Most of those games, if you click again, you'll run.
Right.
And it was just that thing of, like, I get the pace you're going for, and this has a point and click mentality to it, or a general sort of setup to it, but it's just, and they've made so many weird things interactive. There's a fully working Rubik's Cube in this, where you can like pick it up and rotate every bit of it to like solve it and stuff. And just different computers to interact with, and like you can sit and just have a beer where it's all beautifully modeled, where you're just drinking a beer inside this station. And I'm like, okay, like, sure, animation fidelity, sweet, but, like, you've set up this idea that there's an emergency call going on, and later on in the story we've established that there are things to investigate. Why are we still being so slow? Like, there's no reason to indulge in that level of animation. Like, you know, it's like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, other than you just kind of showing off, like, hey, we motion captured this stuff.
Yeah.
It's just little bits like that where it doesn't really, like, knit together as tightly as it could. I mean, I saw it got, like, 2 out of 5 on, I think it was Eurogamer or something.
Totally.
And it is that thing where it's very easy to hate because it's so much potential just being undone by its own design. But at the same time, I'm glad it exists. I support new IP wholeheartedly. I'm glad the Atlas Fallen devs have my money. I'm never going to finish that game, but I still want them to. I still want to champion new IP, and I do want to do that with Fort Solace. I'm glad it exists, but at the minute, I want to wait until I finish it before I give holistic thoughts, but it makes a horrible first impression.
Man, I really want to try it because, like you said there, you know, I have not played many point and clicks, but I have played a lot of walking simulators, a lot of really slow and lethargic walking simulators, which I really enjoyed. You know, everybody's gone to the Rapture. It's a great game, but it's a slow game, totally. And you cannot move as fast as you might want to, especially when you're going around this, like, quite open town area, especially towards the beginning. So with that in mind, I wonder whether I'll, in knowing that going in and having those expectations, maybe I'll benefit my playthrough of it. But I'm intrigued because when you describe it there, I kind of sit back and think, I can go for that. I can go for slower paced animation priority game where I am just living in this world. I am, you know, going step by step and kind of appreciating that level of detail. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. You can tell when it's purposeful. You can tell when it's intentional. You can tell when it adds to the atmosphere. And I guess that's what I'll have to see for myself.
Totally. And things like in Rapture's case, like, that game's one of my favorite. Walking Sims, one of my favorite narrative-driven games. Like, that slow pace only adds to the sort of dreamlike quality of that thing. Obviously, there's reveals towards the end of what's going on and everything, where it all feels part of a whole. And even that game had a sprint button, even though it barely made you move any faster. But it did a little bit. This is just, as soon as you start moving, it's literally from the second you move the stick to move your character, there's a delay to it. And there's a weird kind of just oily kind of feel to it where you're dragging this husk of a dude around. And that can be entirely intentional. But at the same time, it doesn't necessarily feel it. It feels like it just needed a little bit more tweaking. And then because the pace of the movement is just so consistently slow, it's just like, oh my God, this feels horrible to move. And then you're sort of layering on how really, like, threadbare the story is. Like, where I am now, there's 4 chapters overall. I'm about 10-15, but it's really short. So I'm about 10-15 minutes into chapter 3. Things are happening in the story, but for the love of God, no one wants to run anywhere. And so it's just one of those things where, it gets in its own way.
You know what? I respect it. You know what? It might be terrible to control, but I always think if I was in a video game, these guys are jogging all over the place. I'm not jogging anywhere. Even if there's, like, monsters breathing down my neck, and I'm in Call of Duty, I'm walking. I might walk at a fast pace, but I'm walking.
Well, even then, you'd be doing faster than what this dude's doing, because it's just the lackadaisical quality to the way that this guy approaches an emergency beacon is very much nothing. And then when you get inside the facility, it's the same. I'll hopefully try and finish that before I start Sea of Stars, because, oh my God, the amount of games. And I'm still not sick of Final Fantasy. I'll quickly throw in that Final Fantasy V is incredible. I finished that on Saturday. I've played about 300, 400 hours of Final Fantasies in a row, 16, 6, 5, 4, and 1. And then I watched the Spirits Within movie as well.
Yeah, nice.
I'm a sick freak, but I had a good time.
It's been the year of Final Fantasy, so indulge, man.
I think I need to do Final Fantasy Tactics. I also played a bit of Final Fantasy 12, 13, and I restarted 10.
There you go.
So sick. You know that meme where it's like the it says sickos on the guy's shirt and he's like clawing at the
thing. Yes,
I'm entirely that guy.
Yeah?
And I'm just like, oh, give me Sea of Stars, give me more of it. I just back it in. If it's a wagon, just back it onto me. I'm fine. You can offload it onto me. But let's do some new stuff. We had Jeff Grubb speaking on his Games Mess Mornings show, saying that Dragon Age Dreadwolf was originally planned for September 2023, but apparently it's been pushed back and is now vaguely planned for summer 2024. I don't believe that. I mean, I believe his reporting,
right,
but I don't believe in it. There's a million years that they would have had Dragon Age ready for this year.
Right.
With the state that BioWare's in, I noted down here as well that obviously last week we had BioWare suffering various layoffs. They've just lost about 50 staff. They did say on their official blog that they're, you know, committing to Dragon Age. That it was all for the betterment of the games overall. They're committing to Dragon Age. They're committing to the next Mass Effect. I haven't had faith in BioWare for a decade or something. I would be amazed if they get anything out, personally.
Really?
Like, to obviously separate the reality of, like, there's obviously the reality of people losing their jobs. That's not what I'm talking about. I mean, I am addressing that, but I just mean the reality of BioWare as an entity.
Yeah.
They've not been BioWare for forever. EA have sliced them to death, and I'll be amazed if we get anything at this point.
I've got to hope. I really do. I really have to hope that they're cooking something interesting up there. And I like to think that, in my head, the longer it takes, the better it'll be. You you've got to hope that if they did push it out for September 2023, it might not be as good as if it does drop in September 2024. It sounds like they've got a lot of undoing to do with that project. And by that, I mean, if you go back and read all of the reports from pretty reliable insiders and journalists, you know, they talk about how Dragon Age 4 was initially going to be more live service based, and then they've rolled a lot of that back. I think the last report I read on the game was saying that even though it is now a single-player focused game, a lot of the systems that they developed for the live service part of it were still there, so it was kind of this amalgamation. And I just imagine they're rolling a lot of that stuff back, trying to re-find its identity after perhaps a rocky start, and kind of hopefully going to do good by the franchise, because I think I hope that, you know, they know the kind of situation they're in, or EA knows the kind of situation they're in, and realizes that, you know, single player games, people enjoy them. RPGs, people enjoy them. Look at Elden Ring, look at Baldur's Gate, look at The Witcher 3, you know, BioWare used to be contenders for that crown, and then
they were
diluted. Well, some would say they absolutely had it, and then they lost it. So I've got to hope that the potential for what those games could be is going to be realized by the people in charge.
That's it.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I remember reading, I'm not a huge Dragon Age fan. I played quite a lot of Inquisition, but I didn't finish it. And I've only done the very beginning of Dragon Age 1. I came to that game way too late. I think if I played it back when it came out, I'd have been blown away by it, but it just wasn't for me when I came to it later. I remember like Mark Laidlaw leaving BioWare, and like obviously Casey Hudson has been back and forth. The Doctor's left BioWare, the original founders and everything. It just feels like they're all over the place. Their last game being Anthem, they committed to fixing that and then they couldn't, whether it was EA or whatever. I'll just be amazed if they get anything over the finish line. I think it reminds me a lot of the state of Assassin's Creed for the last few years, where it's like you've lost the face of Assassin's Creed after Patrice Desilet left.
Yeah.
And you sort of had this deviation of, okay, we'll do this other version of it. And they just, in Ubisoft's case, they just threw bodies at it and let's just do a different type of Assassin's Creed for a while. But they lost the futurism thread thing. They lost all the Subject 16 stuff and everything else. So I'll be amazed if they can find that identity without any of the core people who helped forge it in the first place.
No, I do get that. You know, we talk about, like, you know, key figures leaving other companies. I mean, just recently, I think maybe even over the weekend, the VP of writing, I want to say, left Rockstar after 16 years.
Right.
And, you know, you sort of see that. You sort of see these people leaving. Again, optimistically and hopefully, you've got to assume that these franchises and these studios can continue to function and continue to be good after losing the key creatives. And I'm not talking about the 50 people laid off here, by the way. I'm not saying it's actually fine that they got laid off. Not at all.
No, no.
I'm just talking about, like, previously, like you said, when the heads left, you know?
Yeah.
You've got to... I like to think that, like, those studios are bigger than the one person in charge of them. And we've seen studios kind of change and evolve, sometimes for the better over the past few years. Like, you look at something like Naughty Dog right now, and, like, a lot of the key creatives there kind of came and went. A lot of key personnel have changed, but they're still producing really good games, you know?
Yeah, it was just, there was that report from, I think it was the Kotaku, there was a couple of different outlets that did it, but there was the Anthem thing. Same with Mass Effect Andromeda, there was like the wider term BioWare magic, how like internally it's like referred to as like towards the end of development, things will just magically come together, and how that was proven wrong twice in a row with Mass Effect Andromeda and Anthem.
Yeah.
And the warring sort of like ideologies from the different teams within BioWare that they weren't able to get on with each other and everything else. I can only blame EA, but I like, look, you think back on the last 10 years of BioWare versus the last 20 years of BioWare, or more than that, that shift is so noticeable. And I remember when they got acquired, it was just all the memes showing like Bullfrog and all the different teams that EA had killed over the years, hoping it would never happen to BioWare.
Yeah.
And at the minute, they obviously recommitted to Dragon Age and Mass Effect. They put Dragon Age out there without EA say-so to sort of get the word out there for Dreadwolf. And it's just, yeah, like you said, you just hope they can do something with it. All I have for them is hope, so maybe. But yeah, next year for Dragon Age anyway is the overall thing. Next thing down is that according to reliable leaker The Snitch, this is written up by Push Square as well, God of War Ragnarok's DLC is about 60% done.
Yes.
Which is pretty good. I what the hell are they going to do with this DLC?
That's the question.
What was the thing? I was trying to think of the major plot point. You know, when we were doing we did a one-hour story breakdown, and we talked about obviously various story threads that we wanted to see going into Ragnarok that were weren't addressed. One of the major things is the who blew the horn thing from God of War 2018 that they didn't address in Ragnarok, and then Corey Barlog was like, oh, that's a story for another time. Is this the other time?
Man, a lot of people get caught up in that.
Who blew the horn DLC?
If that's never answered, I'd be fine.
No.
If that was never, ever addressed, I'd be like, okay, this story still works.
It's a main thing.
I don't need to know about that. I know a lot of people really care, and I respect it, but I don't... If it was who blew the horn DLC, I think I'd say...
It's a major plot hole.
It ain't, man. It's like, to me, it's like finding out why Han Solo's called Han Solo.
No, it's not. It's not at all.
Nah. But I, like I said, I respect people who want it. I know a lot of people like their mythology
stories,
is more watertight than I do in terms of the lore and who did what and why did this happen.
I wouldn't care either if they didn't set it up.
Right.
You specifically made that scene.
Yeah.
You had the noise in the background, who blew the horn, Kratos and Atreus talk about it.
Yeah.
It's clearly a thing.
Oh, it's
and
a
then
thing.
They just ditch it.
Yeah, they absolutely do.
Because you know, there was that thing, I mean, we talked about this a lot over the last, you know, when we've covered this game, that the conversations about it being a trilogy and then it became a two-parter and what happened because of that. And maybe the DLC is just something else that would have been in there.
Yeah.
Maybe some other thread that they ended up ditching for the sake of making Ragnarok tighter, but could be its own little side story. I wonder whether this is a director's cut type thing or whatever. Like Sony has that precedent with Ghost of Tsushima and Death Stranding. Like, what do you want to see? If it's a completely open question, what do you want to see from Ragnarok DLC?
I hope it's like a Lost Legacy style DLC, maybe with new characters. I'd like to see what Atreus does at the end of the game, because obviously spoilers, but he's got more stories to come with Atreus, is all I'll say.
At the very, very end.
At the very, very end, yeah. Like the
classic Ghost fashion, I don't want to see that.
Right, okay. Well, you hate Atreus.
I don't want to play as a trouble. I'm not buying this. You have to play as Atreus.
No.
But I don't want to know what he does. I like that it's metaphoric. He goes off. He's a child leaving the home. He just goes and has a lovely little life.
No, I can respect that as well. I'm kind of tantalized by it because there are so many realms out there, and it seems like, you know, I don't know, you could jump into more Kratos stories, I suppose. Maybe, you know, there's so much time stuff going on with Ragnarok that it's like you can kind of pick any thread and kind of go with it. You can take this character, put them there, you know, investigate characters who maybe died, who maybe aren't around anymore.
Mm.
Like, there's so much scope, there's so much mythology to the franchise that's established in the first game and the second game that, you know, I think if you played as, I always forget her name, Faye, I think it is.
Yeah.
Kratos' wife and Atreus' mother.
Yes.
You obviously get a bit more about her in Ragnarok. That's very tantalizing.
That'd be cool.
I would have liked to have to play as her. I'd like to play as Atreus. I'd like to play more Kratos, of course. So kind of whatever they give me, the Ragnarok ends in such a way where I just think it's the possibilities are almost endless. And I'm just intrigued to see where they go.
If they, I'm just trying to think of the, you almost have to do the, or do you have to do the one take camera thing? It's like, if they do that, then that, does that then limit them dropping into playing as someone who's, you know, in, like set beforehand, who's working for Odin or something? And what's that like? What's his life? What's the, that side of the realm like, kind of thing? But if you played as Faye and set up all the things that she did, all the things, all the, is it Jotunheim, all the giants and the history of those things, you could flesh out that side of things. But yeah, if you're going to stick to one shot, then maybe that makes it a lot harder.
Well, I think, funnily enough, I think they will stick to the one shot thing, at least for the DLC. I would, I've said this before, but I'd like to see it ditched for the next God of War game. I'd like to go back to a grander scope with them, more wide shots to show the scale of the world. But I think Ragnarok, with its bigger scope, treated the one shot quite elegantly, because you're obviously jumping between lands and characters in that game. You're often switching from Atreus to Kratos. In the way that the camera handles that, I always thought was really elegant by incorporating these seamless transitions. So I think you can definitely like go to other characters and other times while keeping that one-shot DNA, because they did it so well cinematographically in the second game. So yeah, they can do that again, I reckon.
Yeah, that's true. It's just because they've not done God of War DLC ever, I don't think, off the top of my head. Like, you got the little side stories that became the other PSP games, which are really, really good little side games. They're more just about when Kratos was in service of Ares and little missions he went on and things like that. But yeah, it's interesting sort of going, like, okay, what little addendum do we want to put in here? And then assumedly they are, I'm going to assume that they're pulling from what would have been the part three, or what would have been, you know, plans for both of those games before they got crunched together. What other essential thread were you going to put in there that you didn't have time for? And blow the bloody horn, lads!
Yeah, well, that's why I think they might stick with Norse mythology at least. You know, because feel like they're moving on from that after the next game. Like you said, they've said they wanted to do it as a two-parter because they didn't want to focus on one story for 15 years. So I wonder if we get one final DLC that, maybe wraps up some of those, you know, loose ends in the Norse realm before we get something completely different in another era with the next, you know, proper sequel.
I just think Corey saying it's a story for another time is just weird, because there was something else he tweeted at the time as well. And I get the absolute Herculean feat of getting this over the finish line, but it did feel like that became this like afterthought. And like you're saying, like, you probably speak for a lot of people saying, I just don't care at this point, which is fine. I don't actively care, but it is a very obvious plot hole, like, or a plot point that wasn't addressed or whatever. So I like the idea of them going back to that, but it's they can do whatever. It's gonna play beautifully anyway. The next news thing down is Xbox era's Nick Baker saying the Gears of War 6 will further evolve what 5 started and be more open world. And this has been doing the rounds in terms of another quote that he gave that would mean that the next Gears game is fully open world, but he's clarified it over on Twitter, just saying that he meant that it would evolve the idea of what Gears 5 was doing, which in itself was like an open world template anyway. Like, you had a vehicle, you could stop at places and do different combat encounters and everything. I think Gears is dead, but I don't know where you come down.
I think Gears is more alive than ever. Gears 5 was the breath of fresh air I needed in this franchise after not really enjoying Gears 4 at all. I thought I played it way too safe. I didn't like the characters that they introduced.
I'd probably back that,
I thought Gears 5 was the antidote to that. It made people like JD Phoenix way more interesting. It opened up
by killing them off.
Not necessarily. Well, it depends if you chose to kill him off, Scott Telford, as
well. Well, at the very, very beginning, they do that thing where they like wipe him out and change his look and everything.
Well, that's it's what
like,
I mean. They make him a war criminal. They kill Battle. Yeah, they make him a war criminal, you know what I mean? It's like incredible. They're like, okay, this guy's bland. Let's give him all of these depths and all of these shades of gray and all of these morally questionable actions after he was just Marcus Fenix's son in the first game, and he's just like the clean-cut hero. I personally love that. But I also like where they took the gameplay. Funnily enough, after talking about God of War and God of War Ragnarok, to me, Gears 5 feels like God of War in that you have those open areas
and
you're kind of traversing them in a similar way. You have this sort of same weight to it. I just thought, in a good way, they were very similar, and I'd like to see that double down on again with Gears 6, because I love the original trilogy, but I was so over that style by the time we got to Gears 4, and even replaying them around the time of Gears 5, I enjoyed them, but I don't need more Gears like that. I've had my fill, and I like the direction they took 5. I want to see more of the world kind of imploding on itself. You know, you had the big storm system in 5, and I want to see that. That could be cool if it was more dynamic in the open world areas. I want to see a few more vehicle sections. I know that might be controversial as well, but I like the direction it took.
Mine was just like with Gears. It's like it, like I said, it's interesting because you have that original trilogy is so definable and so unbelievably influential, and then that huge gap between four, and then yeah, JD was just like their attempt at like a Nathan Drake or whatever, and largely fell flat. For me, the best part about Gears now is the old crew. Like, you, what is it like revisiting Marcus Fenix? The idea of giving him having a child. And just the old crew was just the best part of 4 and 5. Mm. Like, it's just, for me, it's like ditch the new generation and just have the old dudes and let them sort of go through things. Like, one of the most heartfelt, but it's a weird thing where Gears' identity has always had that underlying like strain of sadness that's in there. Obviously, the original reveal trailer, but the depending on, like you said, depending on what you do with the choice at the end of Gears 5, you can get one of the most emotional scenes between Marcus and JD, or Marcus mourning JD if you choose to like let him die. And I think that's the thing that lets Gears be Gears. Like, it was this big bro macho shooter, but it also had this like grounded human bit in the at the core of it.
Yeah.
That they occasionally went back and forth on how sincerely they took it. But it's like, yeah, I'm just curious what you do with like these old warriors who are past it and they metaphorically embody the franchise, and can they be worth, you know, coming back to again? And can you tell a story that is genuinely fresh that way?
Yeah.
And that's a bigger challenge, I think. But it's like, those are the characters that I care about.
Ah, fair enough.
I still really like Kat. Kat's awesome, yeah. But I wanted them to do more with that. Del, I thought, was just nothing. Just a random... You could have AI generated his dialogue. It was terrible.
In the fourth game, I would agree. But right. I think in the fifth game, I don't know. In number five, I thought everyone got more interesting shades to the point where I would have been fully agreeing with you if it was only Gears 4. You know, by the end of that game, when you do get the old guard and they're just so much more interesting, they're just, you have so much more of a connection to them, I'd be like, yeah, pie off these new characters. I don't care about those. But like I said, the story of 5 just managed to elevate them. And obviously, I don't think they're as good, but I think they're definitely worthy of leading this sort of new trilogy. And I quite like seeing, you know, Marcus Fenix from this different perspective almost.
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't get to play him like you did before, but it almost means like that you get to see him through someone else's eyes, and I'd quite like them to do something similar with Kratos in the next game, you know?
Yeah.
For as much crap as Metal Gear Solid 2 gets, I think Hideo Kojima was onto something by putting you in the shoes of a new character and letting them see Solid Snake from an outsider's perspective as this like legendary mythical figure. And I like that they did that with Marcus and the bed and everyone else.
One of the best scenes, as I was in gaming history, or like one of the best scenes in Metal Gear 2 is when you come across that room where all the bodies have already been taken out and you just see Snake go away in the elevator. Like, yep, that's how proficient that dude is. And like you said, that was Kojima's entire point. You're not going to get that perspective unless you play as someone else. My thing with Gears 5, though, is that they tried the open world element. Well, they did do the open world elements, but the rewards weren't there. Like, it was like you could stop and do those little combat encounters, but the things you would get if you battled through everybody, it was nothing. It was just sort of like another set of grenades or something. It wasn't anything that you needed. And I always wanted them to do give me a reason to take the skiff thing out, the skiff vehicle out, and do more with the physics of that vehicle. Give it like a boost system, a momentum system, something that means I'm not just going forward and then stopping and doing an arbitrary cover shooter. Because that's the thing that you were saying about being sick of the formula. It became that to me.
Interesting.
It was like, I'm going to pull up, I'm going to do a cover shooter thing, I'm going to get an arbitrary reward, and then I'm going to go to the story mission where actual things will happen.
Right.
And it's like, I want you to make that world make more sense or be more valuable. If you're going to pivot in that direction, rather than just be, we're doing open world stuff because that's what the kids like. I'm just like, make it make sense.
It worked for me because, yeah, while there weren't those gameplay rewards necessarily at the end of those areas, it was the first Gears game, and again, maybe another controversial or wrong take, I don't know, where it felt
wrong.
Like the world existed. Like, it felt like I was uncovering its history in a really natural and interesting way. It felt like people lived there in a way that I never got that sense from the original Gears trilogy. I realized there were like, you know, there were cities, there were soldiers, but I never got the sense that it was almost a world worth saving. And, you know, I didn't know who lived there. I didn't know the stories of those people. And to me, when you were doing those kind of side activities in Gears 5, you got a taste of that. You got some, like, notes from the people who had their villages raided or whatnot. How were they living in this new world? How are they putting up with the storms? It just felt a bit more cohesive and a bit more brought together, and a bit more human, I suppose, overall.
I think for me, it's like they brought in Gears 4, and then I've had it in 5, where you could like take cover and then leap straight over instead, or you can grab enemies for if they're also taking cover on the other side of cover itself. More stuff like that. Like, give me more moves that let me like maybe do a shoulder barge like over the top, or just things that like add to the core fundamentals fundamentals of what made Gears Gears. Because I think the industry has moved on from cover shooting.
Yeah.
I don't personally think it needs to. I think that you can still do a really good, fun, kinetic cover shooter. It just needs them to be innovative with those foundational mechanics.
Yeah, yeah.
Like transition between different cover points. Or, you know, there's just a way to make that work. And the industry's just gone like, cover shooters are 2008, we're done.
Honestly, after playing Wanted Dead, arguably not a good example of a cover shooter, but I realized how sort of antiquated that gameplay style was it, where it was saying, you know, get into cover or you will die. I was like, no, this is, we've moved beyond this. I don't need this anymore.
No, that's true.
Fortunately, a good version of that, but yeah. I'd like to see them mix it up. I'd like to see them incorporate more elements that benefit maybe a more aggressive in-field play style while still retaining the, you know, classic pop and shoot Gears formula.
Yeah, yeah, because it's like, well, even Naughty Dog do a bit of cover shooting in The Last of Us. Like, if you get rumbled and everyone's coming after you, you do get to have those little encounters where you're shooting through, like, little holes in the windows and the cars or whatever it is, or shooting someone's legs out or something, or planning ambushes, and it all flows so much better because the animation is there and your mind is thinking of those possibilities because you're not just rooted to the spot. It's like there's clearly more you can do with a cover shooting idea.
That's it. You're not rooted to the spot, are you? Like, I love The Last of Us 2's combat system, and a part of that appeal is like finding cover where there probably shouldn't be, you know, like diving into this tall grass, like diving behind this car, getting underneath the car, getting on top of the car, jumping from above, you know, like there's such a sense of
Max
verticality.
Payne 3, baby.
Yeah, Max Payne 3. A sense of verticality there, a sense of movement, like you said, that just kind of like flows really well, and I'd like to see Gears not get that, but like have that better flow path.
Yeah, that's my thing with Ever. I bring it all the way back to Gears 5. It was that rigidity of the original trilogy and an open world, and then various open world elements bolted onto that, but not really changing up the fundamentals that much, other than that you had a few abilities that you could call in with your Android guy. But it didn't really do that much. Final news thing is an interview in GQ with Bethesda's Todd Howard talking about the Indiana Jones game. I didn't even realize he was producing this. I must have missed that.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's like a dream project. He like loves Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's his favorite film or something. In this GQ thing, he just gives an update on the game itself, saying that, referencing Machine Games, how far along the project's coming. He says, they've got the whole Nazi killing thing down. They're doing a really great job. So that kind of implies that there is a gameplay system there, and it's further along than, like, I mean, a teaser trailer would have you think.
Yeah.
And speaking of things that are dead, though, Indiana Jones. Well, like, just who's caring about that?
Well, I think, I don't know, tell me if Todd I'm Howard. Wrong, but I think, you know, you maybe are more interested in the relevancy of an IP in terms of, you know, like when we talk about Suicide Squad, you're like, who cares?
Yes.
I don't really mind that as long as the game is good, as long as like they want to make it for a reason. And it seems like, you know, this is Todd Howard's dream game in a way. I always wanted to work on an Indiana Jones game. And to me, that makes it worthwhile rather than someone saying, get us IP the game, you know?
Well, the thing is, though, like, if this was Todd Howard's producing a game by Machine Games, and it's assumedly a third-person action game with whip-based combat and melee, and it's inspired by Indiana Jones because Todd Howard loves the movie, I would be infinitely more excited about it.
Oh,
because
okay.
What comes with brands and IP are rules, and we can't have the character doing this, and we can't have this doing this, and we needed to have the vehicle for the brand overall, and it's just like, it just has this whole manufactured, molded thing that you wouldn't have if it was a new IP.
Right,
or a new idea. And so it's one of those things where, like, look at the most recent Indiana Jones movie. I don't know anyone who saw it. I didn't see it, but it bombed. And it just seems like that was just another one of those things. Just stick to the rules, do another one of those things. And it was boring AF. And so I hope there's enough to this that keeps it innovative and feeling really, really good.
Totally. I mean, I haven't seen the new Indiana Jones. It's not even necessarily my franchise, but I always like to believe you can do interesting things with established IP.
I hope
I always look at Spider-Man 2018 as taking a few risks, and, you know, that turned out really well. Star Wars Jedi Survivor earlier this year. Mm. Yeah, the game was a buggy mess, but its story was really, really good.
Yeah,
the
characters definitely.
It introduced were really fascinating. You know, I think as long as you're going to these IPs for the right reason, I'll always take them. You know, when it does feel manufactured, where it does feel like the Avengers, where it didn't even come across as if the developers cared about this IP or wanted to do it in the first place, that's when, I'd agree. I'd rather see an original idea. But, you know, I like when IPs are a bit bold, or they have like a unique twist to them, or you might get like the best ever version of Indiana Jones as a thing in video game form. And that's really cool. You might come out of that game thinking, I don't need the movies anymore. This is better than the movies, you know?
Well, that's the
thing,
and it's like, because the nearest comparison in terms of a talking point for Indiana Jones is the movie, there's only, you can only really go up from there. But I just wonder, like, I don't know if you played the old, the Xbox games, the original Xbox games for Indiana Jones?
No.
Me neither, but I forget the name of the one. It was like so long ago. But I remember the screenshots of like fighting on top of buses and doing like an Indiana. Like, he's like the original Uncharted set piece.
Yeah.
And making that playable. And it's like, yeah, like, I guess it's like, what do you want from an Indiana Jones game at this point? Like, do they chase the Uncharted model? Is it a third person action game? Do they try a first person thing? Because that's more machine games bread and butter. And then do you have whip combat and melee, like Chronicles of Riddick style or something? I just wonder what they do for an Indiana Jones game. I remember being so like, okay, when they announced it.
Yeah.
And then now it's like, I just don't even know what I would get from that. I mean, I'm probably not going to play it. Clearly, right. Indiana Jones isn't for me as an IP.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, mechanically, I don't even know what you would do to make it fresh.
Neither do I. And that's why I'm excited by it, you know, because I don't know what they're going to do. Is it going to be first person? Is it going to be third person? Like you said there, you know, I can't imagine there's going to be, is there going to be loads and loads of shooting in it? Like if you are Indiana Jones, like, I don't know.
He shoots dudes with knives. That's his thing.
I can't see him like killing 2,000 Nazis over the course of the game, but maybe you get like a really cool hand-to-hand combat system in there, like you said, incorporate the whip as well, incorporate some gun action, maybe make it like Mad Max where you do have a weapon but it's mostly fist fighting, it's mostly chases, you know.
Yeah, if he can punch as heavily as Max does in Mad Max,
there you go,
maybe you've got me in.
Yeah,
best haymaker in gaming history in that
haymaker
game.
Someone into the propeller of a plane, you know, do something like that. I'm intrigued by it, you know. I would like it to follow the Uncharted model, have that kind of high octane action in exotic locations. I would like to see some vehicular combat, like I mentioned there. I think you can really tap into a bunch of different genres with the IP, but what makes it particularly fascinating is I haven't played those 360 games, so I don't know what the precedent for this is even going to be. Or
one of them is on backwards compatibility. I'm forgetting the name of it. Emperor's Tomb, I think it is. But yeah, one of them is on backwards compatibility. It's all up-resed and everything. And I've played the very beginning of that, and it's like that like plays well enough for the time that it came out in. But yeah, the idea of doing like a really melee-focused game where you focus on the punches, the shaking the evil people thing, and you punch them into propellers and through glass and everything. Yeah. Like Sleeping Dog style, that'd be great.
Exactly. You know that move in Uncharted 4 where you throw out the rope and you jump off the rope and you come down with a haymaker on someone? I just want a game of that. You know, it was really good in Uncharted, but they never did anything else with it.
No, you're not wrong. Legacy. I wonder what era of Indiana Jones you do as well, because like Howard says in this interview that his favorite movie is Raiders of the Lost Ark, and that's obviously vintage like Indiana Jones, whereas now he's getting on a little bit. I love old Harrison Ford as a dude more. So I assume that you do Indy 101, you do the legacy version, or maybe you do multiple time periods. Yeah, I guess he could be sitting reminiscing about some adventure and you just go off on that.
Like, do you play as Indy? If so, like you said, do you go, you could maybe go young Indy, that could circumvent not having to get Harrison Ford, like you could do.
I don't believe they've got him.
When he's almost certainly not. But I reckon if you go young indie, that you don't really have to. You can sort of Alden Ehrenreich him in a way, get someone else, and it doesn't feel too kind of crazy. Or do you get him as like a figure who's in the story, but you're not playing as him? Do you play as someone around him? I don't know.
Imagine if you're doing it, you're younger and you've got to acquire the whip and acquire the hat.
Yeah.
I don't know what else. He's got to acquire the buttoned shirt.
Yeah.
Or acquire what you get to be indie.
Acquire your PhD in archaeology so you can teach.
And then the theme kicks in when you finally stand tall with your brown pants on or whatever.
Maybe.
It's such a weird thing. I continue to say it was a weird announcement. I imagine that, and with Todd Howard producing, obviously it's going to have some level of quality to it, but it's kind of cool, or it's fascinating seeing him, because it's also mentioned that he's going between the Fallout TV show as well. He has a hand in that.
Yeah.
And he's got a hand in Starfield, and he's got a hand in Indiana Jones, and he's also talking about retiring everywhere whenever anyone else talks to him. So
I just think Indiana Jones is interesting because it makes me think, why have you done that? You're on Machine Games. You've got this hugely successful franchise in Wolfenstein. You're part of Bethesda. You don't need to do an established IP.
No.
Like, none of the other studios within ZeniMax are really doing that at all.
No.
So because of that, because it's not like the entire publisher is chasing this trend, kind of like how Square Enix was, where it was like, Marvel, yeah, we'll put three of those games into development. It makes me believe in it a little bit more. I might be burned, it might not turn out very well, but it makes it far more interesting.
You kind of hope that, because obviously it's Disney at the very top, that they would sort of just go like, we don't know anymore. The movie bombed, we don't know. You know the games, Avengers bombed, just over there. Like, EA's also got Black Panther. So it's just like, maybe they can make something work or something. But the state of IPs at a certain level, I can't even imagine what the actual conversations are like. They'll be over Zoom for one thing. They'll actually be in person. But the amount of the machinations of bringing these projects together just seems so out of whack at this point, where it doesn't feel like a click. Because I remember when Roger Clark on stage at Gamescom said, he was like, oh, it's a 2-year turnaround for Fort Solace. And he's like, they knew what they wanted, and they nailed it, and now the game's out. And the fact that he said that in such a public place as such a remarkable thing to point out only solidifies how completely messy all the top tier stuff is. Maybe Indiana Jones is the most straightforward project ever. The amount of other IP stuff, like I said, when you start bringing in brands and the rules and we need this to be this and whatever, and you've got to seek permission every time you want to change the color of something, it's just like, oh my gosh.
It is crazy. It absolutely is crazy. But man, what part of video game development at that level isn't messy? You talked earlier about the BioWare magic that sank the likes of Andromeda. I mean, that sort of messiness, that indecisiveness, that, oh, can we do this? Can we do that? We need to change this color. That's going to take 3 weeks. Mm. Like, that top-down sort of disorganization, I don't think it's some kind to say, seems to be just the gaming industry's bread and butter.
Yeah, or just like a certain echelon of like franchise management at this point, where everything is a brand or has certain rules to follow. Speaking of rules to follow, barely a segue, this is The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Tilford, that's been Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you. Thank you all once again for checking us out across the weekend, and we'll catch you throughout the week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.